Radical love, lavish generosity, extravagant forgiveness, inclusive hospitality, compassionate action, selfless service, a passion for justice, creative nonviolence, simple living. Good day, good people. I'm Robert Farrell. This is Coalesce. Thank you for joining me. Coalesce is grounded in both and thinking, heart wisdom, and listening for the common good arising in dialogue, where we are present to presence. Coalesce provides an opportunity to encounter and discover the multiple perspectives that make our beautiful community. May we see with the eyes of our heart. May we love one another with peace and compassion. May all beings come to know the divine presence within. This is episode 48, Spiritual Maturity, Part 1. During this episode, we'll be discussing one of the most helpful and clarifying elements for the modern mind, understanding things in terms of developmental stages. As a minister and teacher, I know that I can say one thing and it will be heard on as many as 10 different levels, depending upon the inner psychology and spiritual maturity of the listener. Thomas Aquinas said the same thing in one of his foundational principles of philosophy. Whatever is received according to the mode of the receiver. We now call this developmental psychology. I can give what I think is a lousy sermon. Yet a humble woman will come to me afterwards in tears of gratitude for the beauty of something that spoke to her deeply. She may not be highly educated, but she is spiritually evolved. Another smart but cognitively rigid person may hear the same sermon and is only convinced that I'm a heretic. Mature people can make lemonade out of lemons. Immature people can turn the sweetest lemonade tart and sour. It's always interesting to hear what people heard me say and how different it is from what I thought I said. I've learned to accept their understanding as a sign of where they are on the spiritual human journey. I'm quite sure this is what the evangelists are referring to when they frequently say Jesus knew their thoughts. See Luke 6:8 and Luke 9:47. You can actually be trained in reading souls and recognizing where people are coming from and headed toward. I doubt if you can be a good spiritual director or educator without some foundational knowledge of stages of consciousness and development. Jesus clearly recognized levels of development in his parable about the four kinds of soil and how they each received the same seed differently. See Matthew 13:1-23, Mark 4:1-20, and Luke 8:4-15. Teresa of Avila's Mansions and John of the Cross's Knights of the Senses and of the Spirit were other clever metaphors aiming us in the same direction. Then in the last century, it began to explode. Jean Piaget looked at cognitive development, Lawrence Kohlberg focused on moral development, and Abraham Maslow gave us a hierarchy of human needs. More recently, James Fowler described stages of faith, and Bill Plotkin gave us his soul-centric developmental wheel, which outlines the link between nature and soulful growth. Not as much attention has been given to women's models of growth, but two excellent examples are Nicholas Slee's study, Women's Faith Development, and Carol Gilligan's groundbreaking work. Richard Rohr has also attempted to correlate the various schemas of development for spiritual directors, and his work can be found in his book, The Naked Now. In recent decades, building on many of these models, I have come to find great insight in the work of Claire Graves, Don Beck, Christopher Cowan, and Ken Wilber. They teach a spiraling form of development that integrates the biopsychosocial and spiritual stages, which they call spiral dynamics. What I find especially compelling here is that these schemas show how history itself has paralleled the levels of individual development and growth. The trajectory is the same. This gives us a kind of tool for discernment, for reading and critiquing oneself, and also for reading history and understanding how we have come to this critical and perplexing point in human existence, stage by stage. From a faith perspective, learning about levels of development can give us understanding and compassion for ourselves and for others. It can also give us hope, especially during the dark times when things seem to be falling apart, personally or globally. Between each stage, there's always a necessary dying or period of darkness when the previous stage stops working. This mirrors what so many Christian mystics have taught. We need to help one another keep the soul open at such times, trusting that God and grace will move us forward when we are ready. I truly believe that consciousness is evolving toward ever deeper union and wholeness, even though it may not seem that way in the short run. As with everything, we move 3 steps forward and 2 steps backwards. Some call this wholly affirming and wholly denying, which eventually moves us to a third something at a higher level of awareness. Let us take this moment to connect with that third something. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. Dr. Claire Graves, whose research was foundational to the formation of spiral dynamics, writes, "What I am proposing is that the psychology of the mature human being is an unfolding, oscillating, spiraling process marked by progressive subordination of older, lower-order behavior systems to newer, higher-order systems as a human's existential problems change." End quote. Graves posited in the words of Don Beck that the deeper patterns in the evolution of human consciousness reflect different activation levels of our dynamic neurological equipment. I'd like to give you just a brief summary of what I've learned about our dynamic neurological equipment. I'm fascinated by recent studies of the brain that supports Graves' idea that the evolution and growth of the human brain affects our level of consciousness. We need every angle we can find to try to understand ourselves and even what is happening in history, which often feels hopeless. Much of what I'll be sharing about brain research comes from Joseph Chilton Pierce and his book, The Biology of Transcendence. The study of neuroscience and brain development indicates that we are wired for transcendence for the ever bigger picture, but it is also highly dependent on being exposed to living models and personal nurturance as we move from one stage to the next. Fowler and Kohlberg said the same thing. We all need living models. How important we are for one another. This is a good argument for some form of church community, to gather enlightened, transformed, loving people together so they rub off on one another. Beyond models, we also need nurturing, mothering and fathering, loving and partnering at the critical stages of brain development, which are almost all in the first 25 years of life. Throughout childhood and adolescence, the individual regions of the brain and the pathways connecting them are still under development. Between the ages of 15 and the early 20s, excessive gray matter and unused neural pathways are pruned to make the brain more efficient. A myelin sheath, like electrical insulation, forms around a nerve to increase the speed of electrical communication between neurons that are being used. In this way, the brain's regions are stabilized and prior brain developments become permanent. It appears that the pruning occurs starting at the back of the brain moving forward. The prefrontal cortex is the last section to undergo myelination. The prefrontal cortex helps you inhibit impulses, make decisions, make plans, think long term, achieve goals, and evaluate rewards and risk. Research indicates that our human brain is not fully developed until around age 25. Teens are much more sensitive to peer approval than they were as children or will be as adults. We often see this in teenagers as a desire to do something wonderful, to be someone great, to connect with something momentous. It's actually transcendence they're searching for. But because there aren't living models around them of saints, of mystics, of people who've got the big picture, they settle for rock stars, movie stars, or professional athletes. That's the only greatness offered to them in a secular culture. They will try to become rich or famous, which looks like greatness, and yet it is still inside what I call the false or small self. It is not yet the fully connected self, the great self, the God self. If, between the ages of 15 and 25, the young person has both models and enough nurturance, and maybe even an experience of initiation, the visionary, idealistic worldview takes off for the rest of his or her life. That's why such a person is never satisfied and keeps searching for more transcendence, yearning for closer connection with God, with others, and with the universe. I hope you know such a person. They are the prime movers for all of us. If during this early period there are no strong models of wisdom elders, the prefrontal cortex does not keep the neural pathways for transcendence active and accessible. The young person becomes just the opposite, cynical and negative, with a deep, cosmic disappointment that this greatness will not happen to them. "I'm not part of something momentous," he or she concludes. "I'm just dumb old me." So to give oneself significance, they may compete on a music or dance show, or even join ISIS. Anything big and noisy. Pierce says this is what we see in many Western teenagers today because we haven't offered them anything greater or deeper or within. Pierce suggests many young people even revert to earlier levels of brain development because their disappointment is so great. Some revert to the reptilian brain where they only react to life in terms of freeze, fight, or flight. That type of person divides the world into simplistic good guys and bad guys. We call this dualistic thinking or all-or-nothing thinking. There is no ability to subtly read the soul. This is the character of many politicians, preachers, and people attracted to a kind of religion that affirms their good guy, bad guy worldview and takes away their inner anxiety. Hopefully, life and God bring new opportunities through experiences of great suffering and great love, to rewire our brains, even if we have not experienced the nurturing and guidance we needed at those key stages. Let us take this moment to connect to our ability to subtly read the soul. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. According to Joseph Chilton Pierce, there are five brains, each building upon the other. Pierce writes, "At each stage of development, each new system is dependent upon the full function of the system that developmentally preceded it." End quote. Both Pierce and Ken Wilber say that a smaller and smaller portion of the human population makes it to each higher level of brain development. At the bottom of the pyramid is the old reptilian brain. This is probably what Freud called the id. It's the survival mechanism of the reproductive urge on a sensory motor level. Above that is the limbic system, which controls basic emotions of fear, pleasure, and anger. It feeds our basic emotional needs for hunger, sex, power, control, and nurturing. What Freud calls the ego begins here. This feeling and remembering brain holds the pain body that goes deep and can even possess us for decades after we've been hurt. This brain is necessary because it gives us the emotional intelligence by which we read the meanings and social cues of daily interactions. It can be either a helpful emotional program or a wounded and angry one. It largely resides in our unconscious, only brought to the surface by either conflict or honest insight. Next is the neocortex. This, too, contributes to our egoic self. The neocortex has two hemispheres, the left and the right. Although left brain and right brain are more metaphor than they are actual biology or neurology, I will stay with the metaphor. The left, or logical brain, focuses on analytical, sequential, and logical thinking. The left brain deals with old, familiar, settled material that you have made logical and orderly. If you are primarily left brain, so to speak, you can become very logical but also very rigid, and, as you get older, respond from the few neural grooves you've used in repetitive ways. You may not be able to understand people who don't think exactly like you. Without collaboration with the right brain, there is not much capacity for empathy or solidarity, much less intimacy with others. The right, or creative, brain is nonverbal and intuitive, using images rather than words to find and express meaning. Both hemispheres are important and both need education and development by mentoring and modeling. There is a function of the brain called the binding effect that helps people be more imaginative and can adjust better to change. This may also be an important aspect of spiritual intelligence. You normally need some encounter with mystery, paradox, non-rational truth or beauty, and inconsistency itself in order to fully develop the brain. This is why we grow through conflict and not through any easy order or the maintaining of comfort. I believe this is what Jesus means when he shockingly says, "I have come not to bring peace, but the sword," Matthew 10:34. Most of Jesus' core teachings should put you in conflict with business as usual and with what you took for granted. The gospel creates necessary conflicts that grow people. What a shame that we made it into a simplistic answer book rather than read its deep transformative message. Around age 15, a great brain surge begins in the prefrontal lobes. This is what I think Freud would have called the superego. Historically, this was the age for initiations to assure that small ego would be given a great challenge at this time. Helicopter parents are of no help here. This developmental process integrates all the lower brains and aims you outward and upward. Myelinization stabilizes all the neurons that have been used up to now. But all the synapses that have not been used are actually pruned away. What a loss to nature and the world. If there's no one loving our young people, believing in them, challenging them, and modeling them for their next stage, they fail to develop the potential of prefrontal lobes, which connects them to the fifth brain. They inevitably become angry, sullen, and cynical. The fifth brain is located in the heart, literally the muscular organ that circulates our lifeblood. All of the poetry and songs about the heart knowing were not just idle chatter. We now have scientific validation that the heart shares brain-like functions. The connection of the prefrontal lobes to the heart has been demonstrated electromagnetically and at the neural and hormonal levels too. The simplest indicator that someone is living at all of the brain's levels is that they are not violent in thought, word, or action. They do not need to hurt or humiliate the other or themselves. It doesn't mean that they cannot say hard things, but it doesn't come from a place of malice or desire to cause pain. Quite frankly, they can understand the human soul. They are humans themselves. Let us take this moment to connect to the fifth brain located in the heart. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. The practice this week is titled Heartful Decision Making. When you are feeling anxious or stressed, try these simple steps, adapted from HeartMath's freeze frame technique, to help you connect with your heart's intuitive wisdom. Set aside 5 to 10 minutes when you can be alone in a quiet place. Choose a posture that is comfortable, perhaps sitting or lying down, and close your eyes. Recall the stressful situation and freeze frame the thoughts, feelings, and sensations that arise. Observe where and how the stress appears in your heart, mind, and body. Shift your focus from anxiety to your physical heart area. Imagine your heart pumping each breath through your body. Relax into your breathing and feel your heart warm. Hold your attention here for about 10 seconds. Now remember a happy time or picture someone you love. Feel the sensation that comes from such joy and love. Send that feeling to your whole being. Ask your heart, what would be an effective response to this stressful situation that would help reduce future stress? Listen to what your heart says. Visualize yourself taking this action and feeling peaceful. Say to yourself, I am letting go of tension. Peace is within me. When you are ready, open your eyes. You might want to journal about this experience so you can return to these insights later and act upon them. Thank you for being with me. In the days and weeks to come, whatever stage you find yourself in the holy affirming and the holy denying, may you fall into God's loving arms and know that peace is within you. Blessings to all.